Hi, you're listening to the My Cricket Coach Show, and you can find us at pitchvision.com. I'm David Hinchliffe in the UK.
Yeah, I'm Kevin Sampath from Australia. Well, I've just witnessed England win the Women's World Cup, the first officially sanctioned ICC Women's World Cup, and it was a pretty good match, and I have to say England deserved their victory. I'm sure you're celebrating already, David.
Yes, I've got my bottle of Diet Coke here, and I'm swigging heartily from it to say that England are the best cricket team in the world, without doubt.
I did experience a bit of Barmy Army tradition today. I was sitting right behind them, and I felt like a pawn myself, and it felt pretty good for a couple of moments until I reminded myself I'm Australian.
Well, the thing with the Barmy Army is you can always be sure that they're going to enjoy themselves no matter what happens. So the Barmy Army followers in the West Indies perhaps aren't having as much fun, but the Barmy Army followers in Australia are always good value. So well done to England's women. And you enjoyed the game, did you?
Yeah, I did. As usual, the level of talent was up there, and both teams fought really hard, and it was the two best teams in the competition that in the end fought it out, so it was good to watch.
Yeah, I was listening to a report of it on the radio, and what they were saying was what we were talking about last week, which is, you know, the athleticism of the elite level women is on a par with the elite level men. It's really the only difference, really, is the strength and the power, really, is the only difference. But in terms of ability to move and dive and get to the ball and throw, and, you know, throw it accurately and perform all those stuff that a skill, then there's no difference at all. So it's good to see, and long may it continue. We don't have many girls playing in our club. I don't know what the setup is like with you. Do you have mixed teams, or is there an opportunity for that, or is it what happens in your part of the world?
I don't think we have any women's teams in our club, but I think there's special clubs set out throughout Sydney and New South Wales and Australia for women's cricket, and I think it's going to become highly recognised now, and there's going to be a lot more clubs open.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, that'd be good to see. Yeah. Unfortunately, where I am, it's there's no girl cricketers coming through the system in my club, in my particular club, and there are a few girls who play in the under nines, which is quite good to see. But they tend to go off and do other things as they get older.
Yeah, I think it should also be noted, David, that a lot of these cricket players have second jobs as well. Mm. I mean, I was talking to the women's Australian keeper yesterday, Jodie Fields, and she was saying how hard it is to juggle a time between family, cricket, and her work. Yeah. And despite all that, they're still very athletic and they train as hard as they can.
Yeah, absolutely. I know that in England, they have brought in contracts for some of the England players. I don't think the entire squad's got it, but certainly the key England players have contracts where, although they're not like central contracts for the men's team, they're contracted to the ECB to do coaching, I think it is. So they're sort of full-time coaches, like development officers sort of thing. And then so they get to, and then the ECB can keep an eye on them and, you know, make sure that they're injury free and they're training hard, and so they essentially are professionals, although it's not officially, you know, it's not like the professional men. But you know, that's good to see, I think. And the structure over here is they have a level just below international level, a Super Fours, I think it's called, which is quite interesting. It's split into four, the country split into four regions, which is away from the county, the normal county structure, which is every now and again we talk about doing in the men's game as well, and then very quickly the counties say, oh no, we're not going to do that.
Yeah.
So it's all very interesting, and you know, I do try and keep my eye on the women's game. I enjoy that, and I haven't watched the final as yet, but I have recorded it all, so I might have a couple of beers later and watch it.
Yeah, it's definitely worth a watch. So, how's your week been, David? You been doing much?
Yeah, well, I've been training hard. We've been able to go outside for the first time in what seems like forever. this week with the nice weather. So I filmed a medicine ball power drill that I've been doing that I've had a request to do. So I nipped out into the garden with the video camera and did that and put that up on the site. And I've been reading. I'm reading quite a good book. It's been around a while, but it's. I've not got around to reading it, and I've been absolutely glued to it this week. It's called Playing Hardball by a former county cricketer called Ed Smith. And it's really interesting because he compares the way that baseball and cricket are played. So that's really interesting because they're obviously very similar games. But they're very misunderstood games in terms of, certainly in this country. You know, you talk about baseball and everybody says, well, it's just rounders, isn't it? You know, and nobody cares about it. And then and the same in America, cricket, everybody thinks cricket's this sort of quaint game played on village greens with while the vicar's wife prepares the cream teas in the pavilion. You know, there's no. You know, there's a lot of cliches both ways, and so it's interesting to see how the two worlds met. And he goes into loads. It's really interesting, especially the stuff where he talks about the different ways that cricketers prepare and baseball players prepare. The most interesting thing I found in that respect was that in their spring training in America, the baseball hitters very, very rarely face full speed pitching. They just work on their swing all the time with really kind of slow pitches from a swing coach. You know, they have a coach who helps them with their swing, and they just work on having a nice, smooth, relaxed swing. And the pitches are really sort of, you know, they're joke speed almost. You know, they barely reach the plate type speed, but they're just fast enough to get there. So they just work on the swing all the time, all the time. Whereas over here in the UK, certainly professional cricketers, and I would say on a lower level, the amateur cricketers as well, would find it ridiculous to work on their swing if they're batsmen. You know, I hardly ever see anyone working on their, you know, the technique of their swing with tennis ball feeds or, you know, gentle bobble feeds or anything like that. All I ever see, certainly at my club, is someone runs in and bowls and you try and hit it, you know. So, and the person who's bowling is trying to bowl as fast as they can if they're a fast bowler. So it's interesting to see how that's different. And that kind of ties into a lot of the research I've seen and the stuff I've seen where all you're doing is facing very fast bowling, then you can tense up. And because you're not thinking it, you're not. You know, you're thinking too much about it. Instead of just having a natural free swing of the bat, you know, you're all tensed, your shoulders are all tensed. And this is what Ed Smith says as well. You know, this is the psychological side of it. You know, you're tensing up all the time and you're not relaxed. And really what you should be doing when you go to nets is having someone underarming a tennis ball towards you. It's bobbling along the ground and you're practicing your straight drive. So, you know, that's interesting that what he says. What he suggests, he doesn't actually say that, but what he suggests is similar to what I've seen as well and what I've experienced. So that'd be interesting. I'd be interesting to see if you've got two players at the start of the season doing their pre-season nets, and one just did tennis ball, like, you know, bobble feeds and worked on all the different shots, and one had nets. Who would do better? That would be interesting to see.
Well, there's an idea for a fishing case study.
Yeah, maybe we'll set it up for the start of the Australian season. Well, we need two willing volunteers. That's the problem. But if there's anyone out there, look, the last time I asked for volunteers, I got about 100 people. So, you know, if you're out there, no matter where you are, you don't have to be in Australia. You can be in New Zealand, South Africa, India, Pakistan, wherever you are out there in the world, and get in touch and tell me if you're interested in taking part in an experiment like that. Maybe we can set something up.
Yeah, definitely. And how's the Twittering been going, David? Any new friends?
Yeah, well, it's very strange because just in case you've not been listening to the show before, What Twitter is a social media website which allows you to communicate with other people en masse. You follow people, other people follow you. So last week I mentioned that I had over 9,000 followers, which I was quite amazed at. And since then, loads more people have started following me, but my overall number of followers has dropped down below 9,000. So, which is a bit weird. So I asked, I said, I put up a message to the followers saying, why do you think people are stopping follow more people are stopping following me than starting following me? Because I don't really understand the psychology of Twitter, if you like. So I was interested in that and why do people follow someone and then decide they don't want to follow them anymore? Because I haven't been doing anything different. By the way, my Twitter is twitter.com/mycoach, MI coach. So have a look at that and do follow me if you're on the Twitter. And somebody came back. I saw when I asked that someone called Fortune McCookie, which is a great name, told me that I'm new to this and I'm just researching, but I know about energy. And the more positive energy one has, the more attractive we are. Which, wow, that's quite an answer, isn't it? So, yeah,
That's
maybe
deep.
maybe I was being maybe I was being a bit negative on the site. But go and have a look and see if you think that my posts, my 140 character posts, were a bit negative or not. I don't know. The other explanation I have for it is that. I think what a lot of people do is they follow you just so you will follow them. It's kind of like it becomes a game, it becomes a game where you're trying to get more followers, and it become it the whole it's a bit like the whole Facebook and the MySpace thing. The more friends you've, it becomes a game to get more and more friends. I'm not interested in that, so I only follow the people who I think will be interesting to me. And I'm pretty broad on who I say I think will be interested to me, but still, nevertheless, even though I've got, as we speak, 8,992 followers, I'm only following 204 people. So, because I try and only follow people who are genuinely, who A, generally have something to say, and B, aren't trying to advertise to me, because you do get a few people who advertise on it and try and get you to buy real estate or crazy stuff like that, so I don't not bother with those people. So maybe you get someone, they follow you, and then they realize that you haven't followed them back, so they unfollow you again. I don't know. Anyway, but what I'm trying to do with Twitter is use it to ask people questions, and also use it to post up my ideas that perhaps I haven't quite formulated into a full thing for the site yet. So, for example, last week, I posted the new way of coaching catching is to talk about strong hands, not soft hands. And then I thought about it a bit more, and I turned that into a full post. But that gave me an idea. That's just a quick sort of soundbite, and I thought, well, hang on a minute, yeah, I can turn that into a full post, and I did in the end. So that was quite interesting. And also, somebody asked me a question about converting run-up speed into delivery action power, head and arm position at the point of delivery, and follow through for bowling. So I pointed them in the direction of Pitch Vision Academy. So it's all going on there. There's probably get 5 or 6 people a week getting in touch with me and asking me questions, and I post about once a day with some thought that I've had, and just try and make it interesting for other people, and try and give people ideas that they can go away and think about for themselves. That's what it's all about for me. Have you signed up yet? I haven't seen you following me.
Yeah, I've signed up and
Oh, did you?
I think I've subscribed to the MyCoach
Oh,
one.
what's your name?
Just plain old Kevin Sampath.
Kevin Sampath. Right, we'll do this live.
Yeah.
There he is. Oh yeah, you are following me. Well done. Okay.
By there.
Yeah, there you are.
Woohoo.
Follow. Okay. So there we go. If you're following twitter.com/mycoach, also follow twitter.com/KevinSampath. And Kevin has done no updates yet, so you've got to put an update as soon as we finish, so it doesn't look completely blank.
Yeah, I should if I knew how to.
It's very easy. Okay. It's very simple.
All right, let's move on to the questions.
Sure.
Welcome to the question section of the My Cricket Coach Show. Our first question is from and David. He has a problem where his backlift goes between point and cover, and that he reckons his hands are too busy in his backlift, and that his main problem is that his head falls over and thus his body follows it. And he also thinks that his center of gravity shifts because of this. To compensate that, his head shifts as well, which causes problems for his hand-eye coordination. And he asked for your suggestions and any drills you can suggest for top hand control and balance, David. So what do you reckon? Is it too much of a bottom hand problem?
It's hard to say from the way he's described, because if you think about the way he's described it, he says that the bat face is pointing towards cover or
point and cover. Yeah.
So if we're assuming that he doesn't mean cover point, he actually means cover, as in the person who stands between extra cover and cover point. Then
yeah.
I've got my bat in my hand now, just to help me picture this. Then that's not too bad. But he also says the toe of the bat goes out quite a long way as well. So if the toe of the bat is going out towards backwards point or gully or somewhere in that area, that's probably going to be causing him a problem. Now, not necessarily. Because, say, someone like Hashi Mamla, to give you an example of somebody who does. If you watch his backlift, that goes out really wide. But what he does is, as the ball is delivered, it rotates around in the kind of Bradman style, rotates around, comes back over somewhere around off stump, and then comes down straight. So, if it's doing that, then no problem, carry on. I mean, it's not ideal, it's not perfect, it's not textbook perfect, but, you know, if Hashi Mamla can do it, then, you know, at test level, then you can probably get away with it. Now, the problem is, if that bat isn't rotating around and coming down straight, even if it rotates around a little bit, it's still not coming down straight. It's still coming down from way outside off stump, and that... So instead of if you imagine the line of the ball, if you imagine like the Hawkeye style or the pitch vision style line of the ball coming through, then your bat, and then imagine the line of the bat also. If it's coming across the line, even a little bit, then you're reducing the amount of time you can hit the ball in, because you have to make impact at exactly the right moment. Whereas if the bat's coming down straight, i.e. the two lines match up with each other, then you're more likely to hit the ball, and you're more likely to time the ball more effectively. So if that's the problem, then the way you can do that is just, I mean, it almost sounds too simple, but it's not. The way you can do that is just to stand in the mirror, or stand next to a full-length mirror, and pick the bat up with both hands, so the bat goes over off stump, and just hold it there and feel what that feels like.
Okay.
Now, the way you're going to do that is, if you're in your stance and you've got your grip correct, i.e. your grip isn't too far around to the side or too far around the back, it's about halfway between the back of the bat and the outer edge of the bat, your top hand grip. If that's correct, then don't worry too much about the bottom hand at this point. Just pick the bat up over off stump, and you do that by just bending your front elbow and very, very slightly cocking your wrist. Not cocking your wrist completely, just very slightly cocking your wrists. So when the bat is picked up, your forearm is parallel with the ground. So your elbow's pointing down the wicket somewhere down the wicket towards the stumps at the other end, somewhere in that region. Quite hard to describe, but hopefully that gives you the idea. And just do that a few times and get the
Okay.
feel for what it feels like. Then when you've got that feel for what it feels like, go into the nets then, and get someone. We were talking about someone giving you a bobble feed with a tennis ball. Get someone just to bobble a tennis ball to you, and then what you're doing is focusing on picking the bat up over the off stump. Now, why I say over off stump is it's much, much easier if the bat's going up over off stump to be able to bring it back down in a straight line. You can get away with it being wider than that, but then you have to think about rotating it around at the top, which is just an extra thing to think about. So instead of worrying about that, just worry about picking it up over off stump and bringing it back down straight again. What you don't want to do is pick it up
Yeah.
over either leg stump or middle stump, because if you do that, you're closing yourself off too much, and you can only really hit through the offside or around your front pad instead of being able to open yourself up and hit through the leg side. So, pick the bat up over off stump with your top hand in control of the bat.
Yeah. We've spoken about the positioning of the backlift, David. How high would you recommend the backlift should be? Because I've seen players like Yuvraj Singh with really big backlifts, and it creates an enormous amount of power coming from the bat as well. But I've seen players with small backlifts as well who succeed just as much.
Ideally, the ideal is a high backlift, a Brian Lara style high backlift. So you want to be getting the toe of the bat way
Yeah.
up, really high up. I've got my bat in my hand again. You want to be getting the bat really high
Yeah.
up, because I mean, if you imagine your forearm parallel with the ground and your wrist slightly cocked, the bat has got to be up really high there, hasn't it? It can't be low down.
Yeah.
Even if you don't cock your wrist, the bat is above 90 degrees already. And then you cock your wrist slightly as well, it goes up even higher. So it has to be nice and high there. The higher the better, because it's like a swing. It's like a golf swing. You know, you don't see a you don't if a golfer wants to hit a drive, they don't go halfway
Yeah.
up and then back down again. It's just the same thing. You know, it's just physics. The higher the back lift, the more power you can generate on the downswing. So, yes, there are examples of top players with
Yeah.
low backlifts, but they're successful in spite of the fact that they've got a low backlift, not because of the fact that they've got a low backlift. So, if you're thinking about where your backlift is going, if you think about where your backlift is going, the higher the better, because biomechanically, it all just sets you up properly. Whereas with a low back lift, you're not really setting yourself up properly.
All right, that makes sense.
The other thing I wanted to mention is that if you imagine your bottom hand, you don't want to strangle the bat if you can help it. Because again, biomechanically, if you're strangling the bat, then your bottom hand elbow, so if you're right-handed batsman, that's your right elbow, is tucked into the side. And what you're doing there is you're closing yourself off again. You're setting yourself up to hit through the offside only, and you're making a lot harder to hit through the onside. So to counter that, if you just have a light grip on the bat instead of a choking grip on the bat, a nice light grip on the bat, and bring your elbow up, bring your back elbow up.
Yeah.
So you're making like a cradle shape, a diamond shape with the bat. And that shape is that's the perfect position, because you don't have to adjust that shape. You start in that position with the back lift, with the bat over off stump, arms in a diamond shape, and you finish in that position. If you think of a drive, if you think of a checked drive finish position, have a look at that finish position. What
Yeah.
shape is it? It's a diamond shape. So you're just controlling the bat through in a
Yeah,
nice
that's
high
right.
backswing. The bat comes through. You're not having to do very much with your arms. You're not having to adjust your elbow and grip the bat to it. You're just a nice smooth flow, and you're playing a lovely drive or a lovely back foot drive or a lovely front foot drive or whatever it is. So those are my tips. Make sure your grip is right. Get a nice diamond shape with your back lift and pick the bat up over off stump. And you can do all of those things just by standing in the mirror, standing next to a mirror, watching what you do and getting the feel for it. And then when you've got the feel for it, go and do it with a tennis ball, and then do it with a one bounce feed, and then do it maybe with a bowling machine if you can, if you've got access to that, and then do it in the nets. It's easier than you think.
Well, our next question is from another David, and it's regarding a cricket-related injury, and it's quite a story. He asks, last July, I took it upon myself to have a longer than normal bowling stint. I enjoyed it as I bowled fast out and took 3 wickets. However, after a few days, I noticed that my left foot, the big toenail in my left foot had been torn away slightly from the bed. This was due to me getting too carried away with bowling faster than normal. And consequently, when my toe jammed too many times in some older cricket boots,
yep.
I cut a hole to ease the pressure on my toe, and this went okay until the end of the season. But the nail eventually came off in October. Then after waiting some months, it has resulted in some new nail growth, but not enough coverage. I've been to see my GP after I developed an infection, which is cleared up with antibiotics. Do you know anyone who could help me at the start of the new season, as I don't see how my nail is going to grow back properly, given the impact of bowling right arm over and slamming my foot down during this build-up period? David, does this look like a problem due to the shoes, or is there a much more serious problem behind this?
Well, it definitely is a problem with the shoes. I'm not an expert on injuries and that kind of thing. So I spoke to a friend of mine who is a physical therapist and also a cricket coach. And they told me that these things are usually down to the shoes. So what he'll need to do is get some new boots and get fitted ones rather than ones that you sort of buy off the shelf, because very often someone's got two different size feet and they don't necessarily realize it. So if his left foot is larger than his right foot, he'll need to be properly fitted. Now somewhere, like if you go into a sports shop, a normal sports shop, they're not going to be able to do that, but you know, if you, there are places that can test your feet and find out the proper size that you are and get the shoes properly fitted. So track down somewhere that can do that and get proper cricket shoes, properly fitted cricket shoes, to prevent that from happening again. The first thing he should do is go back to his GP just to make sure that even though he had an infection there, that nothing's come back, because it should have grown back in the time that he's had the problem. So he should go back to the GP and make sure there isn't another problem there. You know, it can be anything really going on there, a virus or something like that. So he needs to check that. But if that's all clear, then what he'll need to do is get a sterile dressing and some antibacterial preparation and just protect the area with that. And it should grow back then without any further problems. What he needs to look out for is what brand to use with the antibacterial preparation, because some people have a adverse reaction to certain antibacterial stuff. So he'll need to check with his GP as to the brand, so he doesn't make a mistake there. But other than that, that's all he can do, and just wait for it to grow back. It should grow back in 6 to 12 weeks.
I just got a question, David, regarding performance in games. Would you recommend pushing yourself beyond the limit in a game? So beyond the limit that you know you can go past, because he obviously has. And I've seen players do it, which has led to really traumatic injuries.
In terms of pain, you mean?
Yeah, like when someone's just hurt their ankle a little bit and they keep bowling just so they can try and get more wickets or whatever.
It's very much a case-by-case situation. There are certain circumstances where you can carry on through the pain and it's not going to be a major problem. You know, it's something minor, and although it's a mistake to say this, you know, people can run off minor things. You can get a little twinge or something like that and you can be okay and you would not have any problems.
Yeah,
I get it myself sometimes in my right ankle. I have a slightly weaker right ankle because I twisted it when I was quite young, and sometimes I get a little twinge in it when I'm playing cricket. it goes away within about a minute and it doesn't come back again. So something like that, a little twinge, a little thing like that, and you're fine, carry on. But trying to play through pain is, you know, the pain is there. Pain is your body's way of telling you to stop. So if we're talking about pain, then stop. You know, there's no reason to carry on just because, you know, it's an important match. Because, okay, you might have to walk off the field for, you know, for the rest of that particular match, and your team may even lose that match because they didn't have your runs or your wickets. But you might be back to full fitness by next week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks. Whereas if you try and play through the pain, you make it worse and you end up being out for the rest of the season or even worse. So don't try and play through the pain would be my general advice. But you do have to take it on an individual basis. But yeah, there is a problem. You know, there are people trying to be a bit macho about it sometimes and say, oh, I'll be fine and carry on. But I'm talking about pain here, not soreness. Because everyone experiences soreness and fatigue. Everyone experiences this or that. So, you know, not necessarily that. But if you're talking about pain, pain is there for a reason. So listen to your body.
Well, our next question from John asks about any drills or activities that are suitable for 10 to 16-year-old boys or girls for net sessions. You do a bit of coaching, David. What suggestions would you have?
Well, the main thing I would say, generally speaking, is that you've got to make it fun, because kids play cricket to have fun. That is the main reason that they play cricket. They don't play cricket to win games. They don't play cricket to make new friends. Although those are factors, they play cricket to enjoy playing cricket.
Yeah. And they learn better when they're having fun as well.
Yeah, exactly. So make it as fun as possible. And lots of stuff. The way to make it fun is two things. When they are doing something, make it as enjoyable as possible. You know, get them throwing themselves around. Get them bowling. Get them hitting the ball. You know, don't spend too much time working on lots of minor technical points. You know, just make a general technical point that maybe that they want to work on for that one session. You could say the one thing we're going to concentrate on today is the finished position of the bat when you drive the ball. So when you play any shot, where does the bat finish? Is the toe of the bat pointing in the direction you want the ball to be going? You know, that kind of thing. And that's your one coaching point for that session. And then you go off and concentrate on that. And even if you see loads of other technical errors, you're not there in the net saying, or do this, keep your elbow up, you know, what's your foot doing over there? Because, you know, that's no fun for anyone.
Yeah, that's right.
So, and don't have anyone standing around for too long. Very often what I see with a net, especially with young kids, is you've got way too many kids in a net. You know, you've got maybe 7 or 8 bowlers or something like that. And, that, you know, they're just standing around doing nothing for too long. Then, on top of that, then the coach notices some technical point that they want to say to the batting player, and they walk down the net. They say stop bowling, and they walk down the net, and they give them a long talk about some coaching point, and it's everyone's standing around for ages, and the only one who's getting any attention is the kid in the back of the net who's batting, and it's just no fun when you're standing around waiting for things to do. So do things as much as possible in small groups. And get everybody involved as much as possible in whatever you're doing. So there's always something that you can get somebody doing. And especially with the younger kids, if you say, I need a volunteer to go and pick up some cones, they're all putting their hand up and going, oh, me, 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 because they want to be the special one. So, and even though all you're doing is getting them to pick up some cones. So that's important. And I'd also say plan ahead. Planning is very, very important for these type of sessions. You want to make sure that you get as many skills covered as possible. So don't just turn up on the day and think, what should we do? Oh, we did drives last week. Okay, we'll do the pool shot this week. Plan ahead. Plan in some fielding stuff. Plan in some batting stuff. Plan in some bowling stuff. And get everybody doing everything as much as possible.
And I've also noticed, David, that a bit of healthy competition between junior players as well can be beneficial to them, as well as help them to have fun.
Definitely.
So, like, if there's a really good batsman in your team, if you put the challenge to the bowler saying, if any of you guys can get this guy out, I'll give you something, or
Yeah.
something like that, just to get those kids hyped up.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. You do some intense skill work. This works really well. You do some kind of intense skill work where they're focusing on the skill, and then you bring a game when they've done that for a while. You bring in a game then to stop them getting bored, and you say, right, here's the challenge. We've been doing the straight drive now. Okay, here's some cones. I want you to hit. We're going to have 10 goes each. I want you to see how many you can hit through the cones. And you know they love that. And one thing that a coach at my club does is he marks a chalk mark down in the net of where he wants them to bowl, and it's quite a big chalk mark. And he says, right, anyone who lands the ball in there, I'll give them a polo or something like that, you know, a sweet. And they you know, and suddenly, you know, their accuracy goes up by about 150%. Because they all want this little, you know, it's only a little like mint or whatever, but you know, suddenly it becomes the most important thing in the world. So yeah, really, really good point. What do you do, Kev? What kind of stuff do you do?
I basically try to make them have fun as possible, but he never I, when I did coach, he get different skills based into different nets. So if people the batsman facing spin bowling in one net and the batsman facing fast bowling in one net, so basically they go from fasting, then they go to throw downs maybe the end. We got just the bowler who gets the most wickets this session gets this or a lolly bag or something.
Yeah.
And a batsman who doesn't get out gets points towards an award towards the end of the season. So they're all motivated and trying their
Yeah,
best to get
exactly.
these awards. So we added a little incentives here and there.
Yeah, exactly. It's all about having, but that's really the key to all, isn't it? I mean, yes, we want to develop skills and we want to get them playing at their best, but for the kids, it's really about having fun. And as long as they go away and they said, I really enjoyed that, then you've done your job.
Luz asked a question directed towards you,
Yeah.
David. And the question is, despite all your cricket training advice and your fabulous training plan, you only play for your club second 11. What do you think separates you from your first 11? Have you ever thought about that, David?
Yeah, I mean you do, don't you? I mean it's an interesting question. I think, well, the first thing to say is that yeah, I do, I'm more of a regular second team player, but I do play first team cricket, so it's not that I'm not up to first team standard or anything, because I know that I am. I played first team cricket last season and I did well. And the problem when you're a wicket keeper is there's only one wicket keeper per team, so there is that. But there's a wider question in how important is talent in all this, and how important is practice, and that is quite an interesting area for me, because there's been quite a lot of research into, you know, what makes talent and all that, and it ties in a lot to this 10,000 hours thing that I talk about quite a lot, which is, you know, it takes 10,000 hours of practice to become a master of anything, and that includes playing cricket. So, but where does sort of innate ability fit into all that? I mean, you know, you need a certain innate ability as well, don't you, in order to make it to a higher level. So, you know, how important is innate ability in all this as well? So, I think things are tied very closely together, and this is, what I've been thinking about, and this isn't a complete idea by any means, but what I think is that talent is a combination of desire, practice, how much practice you do, and plus how much innate physical ability that you have. It's those three things together. And some people make up for a lack of one by having been very good in another. So if you're naturally a very talented cricketer, then you have to practice less than someone who's maybe less talented, and you need less desire because you're naturally talented. Maybe someone who is so maybe someone who's less talented has more desire, and they practice harder because they know the innate ability isn't as high.
I was going through Gilchrist's autobiography, David, True Colors, and despite what people think about being a natural athlete, he does point out that he did a lot of hard work when he had to make it full, and his physique was just because of his training his dad put him through when he was young, which he liked, and he wanted to improve. And he says that there's nothing natural about him, that he's just trained really hard from a young age, wanting to make it into the Australian cricket team. So I think what you're saying there about talent is spot on.
Yeah, I mean, someone like Gilchrist as well is he still has. I would imagine that his hand-eye coordination, for example, is superior to, you know, someone
Yeah.
who's playing, say, you know, grade cricket, a lower grade. You know, I would imagine that his hand-eye coordination is going to be superior innately as well. But perhaps, yeah, perhaps because he's practiced so
Yeah.
hard on top of that, he's made it look easy. He's almost made it look like, well, he's just a natural, whereas, you know, maybe he wasn't as much of a natural
Yeah.
as you think. So yeah, there's a perfect example. I think for people, especially if you're younger, but for anyone, you know, you can still improve on where you are, and that's the whole underlying philosophy behind My Cricket Coach and behind Pitch Vision Academy. Wherever you are, no matter how old you are, whether you're a 10-year-old beginner, or you're a 40-year-old club cricketer with loads of experience, and you just want to carry on playing for your club first 11 for a couple more years, then you can improve on where you are. And I think that's probably more important than saying, well, I only play for my second 11. What makes the first 11 players better than me? Or when you're in the first 11, well, I only play for the first 11. What makes the representative level players better than me? Or if you're playing county cricket, you're saying, well, I'm only playing county cricket. What makes the test cricketers better than me? Because there's always someone going to be better than you. There's always someone going to be better than
Yeah.
me. Even the number one batsman in the world at the
Yeah.
moment is not better than Don Bradman was when he was scoring all his runs. So, you know, there's
Yeah,
always
yeah.
someone who's going to be better than you. So rather than focus on why are the people above me better, just think to yourself, well, you know, I've been dealt the hand that I've been dealt. However, what I can do is I can improve on where I am.
We're going to introduce a new feature this week. It's called Assist, Follow Up, and Ponder over the listener's homework question over this next week and
Yeah,
report back. Do we have any sort of detention or anything, David, or is that yet to be?
if you don't do it, then you get detention, so watch out.
So, what's the listener's homework question for this week, David?
Well, yeah, I mean, I thought it might be interesting to find out what people who are listening to the show are doing in their own training, because you know, the thing with a show like this is we try and make it interactive as possible, but you know, you're probably sitting there listening to it on your computer, or maybe you got your headphones and you're on your way to work or something like that, and it's not that interactive. So yeah, we've come up with this question, which to start things off is to just say, what are you working on at the moment? What areas are you trying to improve in your own game? We were just talking about improvement a second ago. So, Kevin, what are you doing at the moment? What areas are you working on? Because you're just coming out of your season now, aren't you? You've finished playing, so it's almost like you're in this kind of in this void where, you know, it's a long time to start the next season. So, you know, what can you focus on? So, what are you working on at the moment?
Well, basically, I've just been doing a lot of gym work to try and get my strength up
Yeah.
before pre-season training
Mm.
to really try and get my bowling as fast as I can possibly get. So, yeah, just basically building up strength all over the body to avoid injury and to bowl faster.
Oh, brilliant. Okay, yeah, that's quite interesting. Be good to see how that goes, and to see if you can make any strides there. So, how long have you been doing that for?
Well, I've only just started about 2 weeks ago since the end of the season because I did realize last season I was bowlers, and if I needed to become a top contender, I need to pick up my pace. So, what about you, David? What have you been trying to improve in yourself?
Well, as you know, we've been having pre-season nets in the run-up to the start of the season. So the main thing that I've been trying to do is trying to get a a better leg side game. So I'm starting with kind of getting my balance and everything sorted out for both the straight drive and the on drive, because they're very, very close to each other, really, the straight drive and the on drive. So yeah, I've been working on that, and I've managed to I've managed to get myself an on drive of sorts, so I can, I can now drive the ball through the onside, through the V on the onside quite well. So now really I'm trying to just keep developing that and make it more effective and time the ball a lot better, and that will open up the whole of the leg side for me, because even balls that are wider down the leg side, you can just flick them off your legs from the same position as you can with the on drive. So I'm definitely looking forward to unveiling that when we go outside. So hopefully it'll be perfect by then. So yeah, so that's our question to you, really. What are you doing this time of year, wherever you are in the world? What are you doing? And if you email in to mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com, and tell us what you're doing, and so we can let the world know what everybody's working on at the moment, because I think it's quite interesting to get a little bit of community stuff going.
Let's have a recap at all the questions we looked at. The perfect backlift. We spoke about getting the grip right and getting the backlift over the off stump, ideally. And we also spoke about the fact that the higher the backlift, the better. For the cricket-related injury regarding the toenail, David suggested getting new fitted boots for both feet and also going back to your GP to make sure that there's no further infection and that the nail should in fact have grown back. But if not, they should get a sterile dressing and some antibacterial preparation, and it should grow back without any further problems. And for the perfect net session for ages 10 to 16, we should try and concentrate on the fun element and make sure that players are never standing around and they're always enjoying themselves, so that they're improving while enjoying themselves and also having fun.
Definitely.
For the question regarding David separating him from the first 11 from the second 11, David spoke about the need of not looking at why other players are better than him, because there's always going to be someone better than you, but instead looking at one's own game and how to perfect it.
Definitely.
Thanks for listening, guys. If you guys have any questions, please email us at mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. That's mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. You can also subscribe to us on iTunes and also hit us up on Twitter. That's www.twitter.com/micoach.
Yep.
So from Sydney, Australia, this is Kevin Sampat signing off.
And don't forget your homework. This is David Hinchliffe in the UK.